Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. Hi, I'm Nick, and I think we should start with Chris this week because, again, I think for the second week running, they are bottom of the tree, are Oldham.
Second week running for most of this season. Yeah. Yes, it's time for another update from the dimly lit chasm of despond that is the very bottom of EFL 2. Yes, Oldham are back in 92nd place thanks to two wins for mighty Sutton. This week's very particular horror story concerns a trip to Leighton Orient, where Latics subsided meekly 4-0, and were frankly lucky to get nil, as the saying goes. The story, though, was off the pitch, after the owners removed tickets from sale to away supporters, excepting season ticket holders who turned up at the ticket office with two bits of ID. They're trying, Abdallah Lemsagam and his sporting director brother, Mo Lemsagam, in the most ham-fisted and counterproductive way imaginable, to silence the protests against their mangled mismanagement of the club. We made it into the Times this week, Nick.
Did
where
you?
The owners were described as incompetent and spiteful.
Yeah.
Accolades they usually reserve for Labour politicians. It's nice we're getting that attention.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Get recognition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Leighton Orient, of course, have been down this road themselves a few years ago when Francesco Bicetti bought the club and went through 11 managers and two relegations in 3 years, dropping out of the league altogether in 2017. They had their own protests then and pitch invasions and had a game called off. So those who are now in charge there seem to have a certain amount of fellow feeling, and they made tickets available to buy on the day to Oldham supporters, despite the moans of Oldham's owner, who was threatening to complain to the EFL about them selling tickets.
I know, this is fantastic
madness.
Loyalty, though. The togetherness is fantastic, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, of football fans, yeah. And we've already had messages of support for the protests that are being planned for the Hartlepool game next Saturday.
Yeah.
But so, there were Oldham fans at Orient, some banners demanding that Lemsagam leaves, and at full-time, after the 4-0 thrashing they'd handed out, the Leighton Orient players applauded them. And the fans, too.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And Leighton Orient did get shot of Bicetti eventually, did get back into the league under the management of Justin Edinburgh. So there is hope that things could get better. Worse first, though.
Yeah.
You've been to Brisbane Road, of course.
I have, many times. See Stoke City play,
yeah. And they've got those brilliant blocks of flats in the corners, haven't they?
Yes.
With the little balconies overlooking the pitch that never seem to have anyone on them. Did you see there was once one of those Find a Home shows on the telly a while back, where the host says, and now for our wild card, we've got something a little bit different. And it was one of these flats.
Yeah.
And he turns to the couple before they go in, and he has a little smirk and a wink to the camera, and he says, now, do you like football? And the woman goes, no. Just flat, no.
Excellent.
So they go in and have a cursory look around, and she looks like something died in there. But that's the whole media attitude to football, though, isn't it? The show, they couldn't believe that they wouldn't like football. It's inconceivable.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Who wouldn't like bread and circuses?
Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
That's
but those little little balcony things, the whole of the world, well, not the world, over Britain over, nobody ever uses them. They are used to store bikes, they're used to put washing out
yeah,
on.
Yeah, with the clothes horse. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But never, never, never.
Never a deck chair to watch a November EFL yeah, 2 yes. game between or, Orient
yes,
and Hartlepool.
Or people sitting out there at 7 o'clock in the morning with a cafetiere and some croissant. Now, my big news for this week, not big news for the world in general, but you might
in
find
Nick
this,
news.
You might find this big news because you've known me for a very long time. I am going to start watching penalties.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, we missed one last night against Barnsley, and it's made me question the whole thing. I just feel that maybe I am not actually having any influence over what happens on the pitch at all. Because if I do, it's a malign one.
Is that what you were thinking was happening?
Of course I was. If the world doesn't revolve around me, then what on earth is it doing?
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
So from Peter Storey's FA Cup semi-final penalty at Hillsborough in 1971 through Euro 96, 98 against Argentina in France, 2006 World Cup versus Portugal, and this summer's Euro finals, all games I was at, my record is appalling. And last night I came back from the game and I checked Stoke's recent penalty record. Okay, are you ready for this?
Okay.
Last night was the 11th we've missed, 11th penalty we've missed out of the last 16.
Yikes.
Okay. And the penalties against us, 37 out of the last 38 have been scored. So I feel, you know, I'm not a mathematician, I'm not a statistician.
But give it up, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I saw the penalty last night in that Stoke game, and the keeper did what you think, surely keepers must do this more. He just stood in the middle with his hands up, and the ball came straight at his face.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what they try more often than not now. They try and bang it down the middle in the hope that the keeper will have dived out of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Some sort of sad news as well that I wanted to pass on. Admiral Guzman, the Peruvian communist guerrilla leader with Maoist tendencies, has died. And Guzman, who was once kept in a cage on the top of a skyscraper, led Peru's Shining Path, or Sendero Luminoso.
Okay.
And I don't know whether he liked football or not, but he was 86, mm-hmm. in case anybody wants to start a minute's applause at one of this weekend's fixtures. And the other thing that this weekend was, because Ronaldo was there, there wasn't so much of a fuss about Arsenal being at the bottom of the league. But Michael Arteta apparently got a result against Norwich and saved his job, which disappointed the man lined up to replace him, which was Paddy McGuinness, of course.
Paddy Four Phones, yeah. I love that you call him Michael. That's terrific. Yeah, so the EPL did swing back into action at the weekend. And to be honest, it was a little bit overshadowed, wasn't it, by Emma Raducanu winning the US Open in New York on Saturday evening. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that, and that was absolutely wonderful and made me question everything about football.
And Gary Lineker tweeted about it while he was on the air doing Match of the Day. Well, he was supposed to be watching Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what sort of unprofessional jackass tweets while he's live on the air? Not you or me, that's for sure. But I'm sure Mark, our producer, could put together a short list.
Yes.
But anyway.
That was purely for you and for him, wasn't it?
Yes. And also spite.
Yes.
Which is a great motivation for broadcasting everywhere, I think.
Yeah.
So we're four games in now, aren't we, to the marathon, not a sprint. And I'm a bit disappointed, I must say, with how blinkered and defeatist the response has been to the start of the league season. Marcelo Bielsa said, from 7th to 20th, it's up for grabs. Already they've given up on the top six. And this is what's wrong with the Premier League, I think. Surely they haven't given up on finishing ahead of Arsenal, have they? Already? I mean, Andros Townsend was interviewed after Everton went 4th, level on points with the three teams above them, ahead of Manchester City. And what's his target for the season? Well, we're just hoping we'll get in the top 10, maybe push towards Europe, by which he means we could sneak 7th and creep into the nonsense cobbled-together competition that Spurs are in this year that nobody's really thrilled about. That's what's wrong with the Premier League, I think. They've given up already.
And also, what happens to Andros Townsend in the 2 years in between each of his great appearances? Because he does seem to... Every 3 years. Oh, it's Andros Townsend. I'd forgotten about him.
Andros Townsend was one of those players, and there are a few of them, who get a chance for England look absolutely wonderful and score some brilliant goals, and then they have a little knock, or they drop out of the running somehow, and you never see them talked about again.
No.
And there are players who feel like they're going to be a fixture for years to come, who get in and have a good run in the
Micah Richards was another one.
Micah Richards, what? Stephen Williams, do you remember him, of Southampton midfielder?
Oh, Steve Williams,
Scott Parker was a little bit like that.
I mean, you could understand it under Bobby Robson because he couldn't remember the names.
Mike Duxbury had like 10 games in a row, do you remember?
Right back.
And then had gone. He was gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
So, we were also going to talk. I want to talk about Emma Raducanu, actually, because I have to say that I watched that on Saturday night, and There was so much joy, dedication, athleticism, mutual respect, no tantrums. You know, when she got injured, there was blood running down her leg, so she went off. And it just made me think, that football, there's none of that. There's none of that mutual respect. There's
well,
none
she's
of that.
A real man, Emma Raducanu.
Yes.
Compared to football.
Well, I think she's capable of nearly anything. She could serve a writ on Prince Andrew.
Let's hope she does.
So what about, I mean, the gamesmanship, I tell you what, Stoke play Huddersfield on Saturday, and I went to that, and the amount of time wasting was just appalling. And I'm not one of those people who's naive enough to think that, you know, Stoke haven't done it and don't do it, but it's just become so prevalent. You know, every single throw-in is a performance, every single free kick. There's all this going off to get water all the time, and a goal scored is, you know, they may as well have a ticker tape parade before they get back to kick off again. And I know that sounds like, you know, oh, it's better in my day and all that sort of stuff. But actually, when you pay to go to a football match, you'd quite like to see some football.
And in between the bouts of gamesmanship.
Yeah.
I mean, I particularly hate the style of defending where a defender shields the ball and backs into the attacker and then throws himself forward as though he's been...
The defensive dive is definitely something that's crept in the last couple of years.
And I don't know. I think there should be more yellow cards for that. They seem to only give yellow cards for diving when they're trying to get a penalty. Yeah. But it happens all over the pitch.
Yeah.
Players just throwing themselves to the ground just to get a positional advantage.
And what's noticeable about the defender's dive is they will often then grab the ball.
They will dive onto the ball.
Just in case. Yeah, absolutely.
And you should see more free kicks for handball for something like that as well. I mean, I also hate... I hate football. I also hate the placing the ball on the very edge of the quadrant when taking a corner. Yeah. I mean, what sort of advantage are you supposed to be getting from that?
Yeah.
It's like just saying, here we are, I'm as professional as can be. Yeah. Here I am pushing the envelope of what's possible. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think the point is, if the rule is it's got to go further back than that, this is going to give me an advantage, which is completely untrue. The reason they changed the rule, which is completely irrelevant now, is because what happened was when pitches weren't so good, you used to get a lot of corners. It used to get all churned up in the corner. So they said, well, you know, as long as
it's, give you a little bit extra,
it's in a reasonable spot.
But room for foothold.
Yeah, there's all that sort of turning it up and the backspin and making sure it's bang on. But I found the last two games, I played Huddersfield and Barnes at home, and I just found the referees to be... just completely impotent, to tell you the honest truth. And also, they think that they're part of the game, and referees love it. Players talk to them, and
it's all about them, a lot of them.
Absolutely. But they remind me of a really bad supply teacher with a really difficult group of kids, and they're forever sort of running around, no, there's no need for that. Hold on, what's happening behind me? Like Mr. Barraclough.
Basically, it's your own time you're wasting.
Mr. Barraclough in Porridge. Yeah. No, now. We'll have none of that, will we? And the kids, the players, are there saying, sir, should I put this over here? Sir, Mr. So-and-so, look over there. There's a boy that's crying and all that sort of stuff. And it's just,
oh dear.
Drives you mad. And it reminds me, I have to say, briefly, I was a teacher. It reminds me, talking of supply teachers, of a bloke that came into the staff room one time on his first morning. This is absolutely true, and it was so long ago that he taught divinity, which I don't think has been a subject for
since the 14th century.
Yeah, basically. And he came in and he said, "Oh, you all think the lower six, they're a difficult bunch, and I know they're a bottom set, but you know, I've just had a fantastic conversation with them, you know, and they were so mature and they contributed and they were interested in what I had to say, you know, and it was all about morality." You know, and I tried to make it relevant to their lives, you know. And you know what? They really were so mature when I told them that I was a virgin. And everybody in the staff was like, oh, no. And so it was that Mr. Irvin became Mr. Virgin from there on in.
And speaking of virgins, we're talking about Ronaldo for the second week in a row. Ronaldo's agent was clearly desperate for his second debut to be headline news. I mean, I'm not casting aspersions, but apparently Newcastle keeper Freddie Woodman now has a new island. But it's looking more and more like a cult, don't you think? I mean, there was a bloke interviewed after the game on Saturday saying it was the best day of his life. on the telly. I mean, have a bit of respect for yourself, mate. You know, the best day of your life should be a day on which you did something yourself.
Yes.
Achieved something. Not the day you watch a glistening freak-necked Ponce tapping a rebound off the keeper's shin from 2 feet out. I mean, I'd say, what would your wife think, except the chances of him being married look pretty slim? You know, unlike well, the man himself.
Well, any more.
Any more, exactly. Apparently, the Newcastle game, Ronaldo's debut, was the most illegally streamed game in Premier League history, with, apparently, according to the report, almost over 2 million viewers. Almost over two. How the hell does that work?
Yeah.
Almost is the word you use when you're stretching to make your stats sound more impressive. Over is the word you use when you're worried the number on its own doesn't sound newsworthy enough. Almost over 2 million viewers.
Yes. And can I put it to you on the subject of language? What the fuck is a second debut? You cannot have a second debut for the same club. It may be your second time. It is not a second debut. So just listen to me, Sky Sports and Match of the Day and all the other countless newspapers and media outlets. It is not a second debut. You can say it as often as you like. It is not true. And also, when Romelu Lukaku was making his second debut for Chelsea, you know, feel for him, he was absolutely brilliant and had a lot more influence on the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And even Edouard, who was making his first debut, which is now a
and
thing.
And scored apparently. After 28 seconds.
Yeah, and then scored another. But do you know what? You might be surprised at this. I think we're perhaps being a little bit hard on Ronaldo.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that.
Yeah. Because, you know, you've got to think, he's come out, okay, he's played there before, as we've heard, that's why it's his second debut, as I say. But he's in a new work environment, okay, there's people he hasn't worked with before.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a little bit of nerves, hasn't it? There's got a little bit of, oh, I wonder what they'll think of me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, if that was me, and I was moving into a new work environment, okay, and during my first day, a plane flew overhead and suggested that I might be a rapist, you see, that would put me off. But not him. I mean, that's professionalism,
isn't
it?
Yeah, didn't put him off his stride.
Didn't put him off his stride at all. Well done, Ronaldo.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's obvious that there's more and more sort of cult status that he's actually becoming a cult at Manchester United. According to Lee Grant, the former Stoke and Oldham goalkeeper with an impeccable pedigree, the players have stopped having puddings because of the cult. I mean, they were getting offered apple crumble and custard or chocolate brownies and ice cream, because whatever else Manchester United are, they're not monsters, you know, but they're all peering over at what Cristiano is eating and deciding to eat like him, apparently, in the hope of cultivating a similarly gigantic neck.
Right.
And Ronaldo has several plates, apparently, if you want to follow his plan at home. And on one of them, he has quinoa, whatever the hell that is, avocado, and two boiled eggs.
Well, that's the same sort of thing that Michael Arteta eats, by the way.
But some important information will doubtless emerge in coming weeks, such as what's on his other plates, not pudding, is all we know, and how he eats his boiled eggs, presumably not with soldiers, or does he make soldiers out of avocado? But
this is how cults start. This is why a lot of people eat fish on a Friday. It all goes back to Christ, and it's the same with Ronaldo. We'll all be eating quinoa in the weeks coming.
Quinoa comes from the Andes and is not a grass, but rather a pseudo-cereal related to spinach.
Mm.
So there.
Somebody had to look it up.
Yes, someone did. It's actually written down here with an asterisk next to it. But did you see the Monday night football on Sky this week?
I saw a little bit of it.
The Everton-Burnley. Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville went head-to-head over the burning issue of the day, which is the greatest player of all time, Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi. And instead of talking about Everton against Burnley, I mean, it's right in Carragher's wheelhouse. I mean, he loves nothing more than ranking things, you know, who's the best fullback in the world, who's the greatest player in the world, all of that. He's a massive ranker, basically, is what he is.
Thank you.
And that morning, Neville and Carragher seemed to have fallen out on social media in a pretty much incomprehensible spat. Did you see that? Neville, apparently.
Oh, I'm sure it was incomprehensible if it involved writing things down.
Neville accused Carragher basically of selling out. You write for the Telegraph, drink red wine, and stay in a 5-star hotel in Whitehall. Like he shouldn't do any of those things.
Yes.
And Carragher hit back with calling Neville the Roman Abramovich of League Two, and said that he used his testimonial money to build a hotel for the fans. Mm. They still have to pay, and Saturday was his biggest taking. Let's analyse that bit of Ronaldo on Monday Night Football. They still have to pay. Of course they have to pay. That's how you run a fucking hotel.
Well, yes, and also the trouble with them having that conversation is it just exposes what a completely different world they live in to most other people, doesn't it?
No, they're watching football. people in the most extravagant suits.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With a wine-coloured, well, maybe it's a white one that he spilled his red wine on,
yeah,
but a handkerchief out of his top pocket.
And it reminds me of, I have a friend who's a comedy writer who was writing for Lenny Henry, and Lenny Henry said, I've got this whole bit I want to do about my driver. And the bloke said, ooh, I don't know, Lenny. I don't know whether people are going to follow that too well.
Yeah, I don't understand why they're so fancy on this Monday Night Football. Why don't they do the show in shell suits, like the people watching at home, or in their pants? You know, how are we supposed to relate? And at one point during the Ronaldo-Messi debate, Neville said, it's just like arguing with a five-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, and if I were you, Gary, I'd just be relieved he didn't gob at you, yeah, you know, out of a passing car.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, the person who should be shot in all of this is the producer, who said to them, I'll tell you what would be interesting. Let's talk about who's the greatest player in the world ever.
Yeah.
Which is like the dullest conversation.
Well, at least it stopped Carragher from going on about Rafa the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How he played with Rafa and how brilliant Rafa is.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
So in a moment, we have got our guest. Well, our guest has just walked in and told us that he's currently making a documentary about the proliferation of anger and bile in the world and how it's perhaps causing a negative reaction, which is a bit of a shame because that's all we have on this show is anger and bile.
I was listening. I have listened already to your podcast, and I was listening to it in the build-up to my entry. And I think of this as, you know, two old men saying very curmudgeonly things about football and life in general.
Three now.
And I thought, well, maybe that's unfair. And then Chris Ignan said quinoa, whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, no, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah, we know our public.
Yeah.
We know our public.
Yeah.
So clearly we have David Baddiel here, who is a famously Chelsea and England fan, clever man.
Thank you.
Wonderful comic.
Thank you.
And also best known, certainly amongst me, for having a fight with David Dean's wife.
That didn't happen. You know, I didn't have a fight with David Dean's wife. Perhaps I can clarify. I was at the Japanese World Cup at the England-Argentina game. Yeah, it was the England-Argentina game. Sapporo, yeah. Which was what, round of 16, was it?
No, it was a group game.
Second group game. Okay. And you'll remember that David Beckham took a penalty in that game. So, there I am, and I am in some sort of slightly FA area, and I'm with various people, one of whom is Barbara Dean, who is David Dean, the chairperson of Arsenal. Chairperson? Yeah, I'm going to say that. And so, there I am, and she's there, and also... can't remember her name.
Nancy DeLorean.
Thank you. Thank you. God, this is going to be a problem, okay? Because I am 57 and my mind is going.
Yeah. So. Also there, me.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're older than me, which is worrying. Anyway, Nancy DeLorean is also there.
Perhaps we should remind people who Nancy DeLorean is.
Yes, Nancy DeLorean was Sven Goran Eriksson's girlfriend.
Yes.
I don't know if she was at the time. I think she was. Maybe she was.
Otherwise, she wouldn't be there, would she? Ulrika Johnson would have had the tickets.
I think their relationship was quite on and off, to be honest with you.
But she'd have been in the ex-wife section. She wouldn't have been with Bob.
Yeah. There I am, and I also had with me a photographer, because the reason that I was there, apart from just to watch the games, I'd managed to get the gig because I was writing articles in the Evening Standard, London's Evening Standard, about the games, just thought pieces, like funny pieces about watching England, blah blah blah, in Japan. It was a fucking brilliant gig, I have to say.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. So photographer Nancy DeLorean and Barbara Dean, and so what happens is that David Beckham is about to take the penalty. We're all there. We're all, like, excited, right? And he scores, and I leap up. I leap up. I put both my arms in the air. I leap up, and hooray, 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 right? And then I notice that Nancy's there. I give Nancy a hug, and my photographer does take some pictures of that, which are in the Evening Standard, right? Okay, so then we get to half-time. It was in the first half. And Nancy DeLorean, so I'm remembering this as she asked me about it, because I haven't told this story for ages. Nancy DeLorean says to me, in her really weird voice, Barbara is very upset with you. I think that's quite a good impression.
Very good impression. Yeah. I've never heard Nancy DeLorean speak.
It was a bit like that.
I thought that was Vincent Price.
And she says, Barbara is very upset with you. And I thought, really? So I turned around and said, Barbara, what's the problem? And Barbara is there with her arms folded, looking really pissed off. Oh. And she said, you knocked me over. I said, no, I didn't. What are you talking about? I can't remember that happening. And she says, definitely, you knocked me over. And I said, when? And she said, when David Beckham scored, you knocked me over. And I said, okay, I'm really sorry. I don't remember that happening. But yes, I do remember jumping up with everyone else when you know, Beckham scored because I was excited, and if I jostled you accidentally, I'm really, really sorry. And she said, no. She was absolutely convinced this. You knocked me over, you pushed me deliberately because you wanted to hug Nancy, right?
Right.
You wanted to hug Nancy, and you wanted a photo of yourself hugging Nancy, so you pushed me deliberately. And I said, I really didn't. I promise you, all that was in my mind at that moment was we scored. England have scored. I'm so happy. Hang on. So this is the punchline, really, right?
Hey.
And then Barbara said, well, if that's true, why didn't you hug me? And I said, because you were on the floor. You were already gone by then.
No.
And she was furious at that. Furious about it.
Oh, my God. At half-time in that game, I was sitting a block over, and I met David in the aisle, and I said, oh, David, where are you sitting? And he said, I'm sitting over there, but I don't want to go back. I just shoved Barbara Dean over. Yeah. She's really furious.
No, she's really furious.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, England fans get a really, really bad reputation. And there's you and me, Chris, both at that game, actually paid our own way to go to the World Cup. In the normal seats, not fighting with anybody. David, free tickets in the FA section.
And you were explaining to our Japanese friend, Mickey, why you don't look at penalties.
Oh,
and him not being able to understand why you hadn't
watched
that David
Beckham
penalty. Do you
not look at ordinary penalties, or is it just penalty
shootouts?
No,
any penalties.
You don't look at...
I officially do.
Oh, how have you got over that?
Well, because last night we missed another one, and I just thought, this just...
Oh, it happened last night, you grew in this way.
Well, no, it took a bit of time. We missed a penalty last night, and
Stoke,
then
you're talking
on
about.
The way here, I decided to
he made
to
a
start
life
watching
change,
penalties.
For the purposes of saying it on a podcast, which is a great sacrifice.
Because I think of both of you, probably, as men whose personalities were both formed when you were about three, and have never changed in any way.
Funny enough, when you just came in just before we started, you were saying, are you going to ask me any factual questions and all that stuff? Yeah. Which is actually what nearly everybody says, and I know I've been in that position, which is...
But you're not going to have a problem with it, and neither is him. Because that thing...
Neither is him.
Football,
him. We have a slight problem with neither is him.
Yeah, see, my mind is going. Grammar's the first thing to go. Yeah. Neither is he.
It's the grammar. The grammar goes
Chris,
first.
Right, yeah. Because I think I wrote about this in my first novel, about how I like football, I love football, but I don't think I'm anal about football.
Right.
By which I mean, I am not someone who, if you said to me, FA Cup winner since the war, I'm not going to be very good at that. Right?
No.
But I think you can feel like, if I don't know that, I am not a proper man in some people's eyes.
Yes.
In the person asking the question's eyes.
Yes.
And I sort of think that's you, Nick.
Well, no, I'm not so much... It's not so much a facts thing. I mean, there was a time when I was pretty harsh on the whole, if you don't go to the games, it doesn't count.
Well,
and if you do go to the games, you have to go to all of the games.
Yeah, home and away.
Home and away.
Reserves.
And all that. As I've got older, I have...
Mellowed?
I would say, no, mellowed's probably not the
too
word.
Too strong a word.
No,
COVID
just not
was COVID the word.
I know what it is.
Yeah.
As I've got older, I've not been able to afford to go to as many games. That's what it was.
I
still feel the same.
Yes.
But I can't really call you out on it.
To get there.
No.
Do you not go to every game anymore?
Not every single game.
It causes you a lot of pain, I can tell, to say that.
It does cause me a lot of pain.
Yeah, but your life is probably actually better.
Well, you say that.
Well, I know there's issues in your life.
Yeah.
I'm aware of that.
I think this is a different programme.
That's the danger of having me on, though. I will obviously refer to everything I know about you
yes.
in an unrestricted way.
Yes. Yeah. But you were saying about being asked factual questions, and I used to get that sometimes. They come in and they go, oh, yes, well, you... Basically, what they're saying is, you claim to be
a fan.
Well, answer these
questions.
There's
a new thing with that, which is the memory thing. I don't know if you do, either of you, but I am worried about my memory.
Yeah.
And my memory includes, like, not being able to remember, you know, where I am. Not, that's a bit strong, but sort of like where I'm meant to be, certainly where I put it, and it gets worse and worse. And so now, I was just thinking, probably in a slightly paranoid way, I was thinking, oh, who was the Chelsea manager when we played Man United in the Chelsea? I went to the Champions League when we played Man United, and then again...
Roberto Di Matteo.
No, he was Roberto Di Matteo when we won.
Oh, it was...
But it was...
Avram Grant, when we lost to Man United.
But I thought, like, it's not that I've... don't know that. I don't know if I can retrieve it anymore.
Well, no, and also Chelsea have many more managers in a shorter space of time than they ever have done before.
You support older, mate. You know, I don't know who the manager was 6 weeks ago, and it might have changed by the time I get home.
He does. That's the reason Chris hates doing this podcast, because he hasn't got his phone on while we're in here for just half an hour, and Oldham could have had two or three managers
I don't know that. That's the thing I don't know. Is Oldham particularly volatile at the moment?
Yes, they are.
Okay, why is that?
because we have incompetent and spiteful brackets the Times owner.
Could I just suggest that if you want to know about that, you listen to this podcast sometime, because Chris, strange enough, mentions Oldham every now and again, and this stuff comes out. Is that fair?
It comes out.
Now, I want to ask you about Three Lions, It's Coming Home, and all of that stuff. And if that has become painful to you, or, you know, and obviously you should be proud of it, because I think it's a very good song, and it at least has a story in it and references to real things that have happened and a logic to it. But has it become something that is a pain that people come up to you all the time, especially during tournaments, and want to talk about it or sing it in your face?
Well, yes and no. So generally, no. So there's a number of things there. I've talked about this before, that, you know, if you're at all well known, sometimes you think about the best known for moment in on your obituary, right? And I will, without doubt, it will be best known
You're just
for...
looking at me when you say obituary there. Just
I thought you might write it. I thought you might write it, right?
No, I just thought you thought I was going to go first.
No. The best known for, and you will get, they think it's all over, right? And I will get Three Lions. Best known for Three Lions.
And you don't know what I'll get. You just have no idea.
You don't know what you'll get. Complaining about Oldham. And they'll print a picture, as I've often said, of Ian Brodie accidentally, because people think I'm the same person. And I don't really mind being best known for Three Lions, because I am very proud of Three Lions. I also think Three Lions is an extraordinary thing in lots of ways. The most extraordinary thing about Three Lions is it's the least, for something that's that successful, it's the least top-down thing ever, in the sense that the FA were never very keen on it. They didn't want it played at Wembley. There was a general sense of like, oh, we don't know about this song, it's a bit partisan, and it refers to actual footballers when we first wrote it, and like, oh no, this is all wrong, we just wanted a general nice song about upbeat things or whatever.
By Anton Deck.
Yeah, done by Anton Deck. And then spontaneously, shall I tell the story? I've told it a million times before, but I'm going to tell it again. Maybe this podcast suits it. So, in that tournament, as you'll remember, of course, because we all know our facts about football, is that England didn't do very well in the opening game. We played Switzerland. It was 1-1. Everyone thought there'd been the dentist chair as well. Like, it's going to be shit, like it always is, which kind of is what the song predicts. And then, first half against Scotland, didn't play well either. Second half, I think you might have said this, or was it you? Someone said this, and I've said it to him himself. Jamie Redknapp came on at half time, and he just played little balls across the midfield. Is it either of you who said that? Can't believe it's something I came up with myself.
I think it was Jamie Redknapp.
No, it wasn't Jamie Redknapp. I said it to Jamie Redknapp on that other programme that's like They Think It's All Over, League of Their Own. He was incredibly, because he's like the whipping boy in that show, he was like virtually had tears that someone was being nice to him. But anyway, the game changed. Gary McAllister missed a penalty. Seaman kicks it up. Gazza scores that incredible goal. The sun comes out, basically, and they go off. They've beaten Scotland, and the DJ, against the wishes, is an interesting thing. He'd been told not to play it, particularly against Scotland. Whoever that bloke is, I owe him a great debt. I don't know his name. I've never known his name. The DJ decided to put it on.
Might have been Bruno Brooks.
It's definitely, it wasn't anyone Scottish.
No.
I'll tell you that. Jimmy Savile, I think it was. No, it wasn't. Why spoil the moment like that?
That really did spoil the moment.
It really did. But I, you know, sometimes have to go for that. Anyway, DJ, the stadium DJ, puts it on, and this is the point. Instantly, a song that had gone to number one, but it had then been knocked off number one by the Fugees, right? So we and Frank thought, well, that's nice, we had number
killing
one, but it's over. Yeah, Killing Me Softly. Well, that's over, right? The whole crowd starts singing it, like 78,000 people. Immediately, they all know the words. The song has buried itself in the hearts and minds of England football fans. Hearts and minds. I'm all right with that.
Anatomically speaking, minds.
All right. It's buried itself in the souls.
Diaphragms.
They've taken it on board.
That's
what I'm saying. Without anyone doing anything, without an advertising campaign, with no branding or any of that fucking shit, it's literally, they've just heard it and they've decided this song chimes.
I think it was one
actual experience.
It was one of the great moments of Euro 96 was that, you would be aware of this, the camera picked out you and Frank with the look of frank astonishment on your face at what was happening.
It's incredible. And I have said this, that I know that one should say that the best days of one life. You talked about that with whoever it was you were talking about, who said it was the greatest day of his life, some fan.
Earlier on, yes, the Ronaldo.
Yeah, the Ronaldo thing was the greatest day of his life. And one is supposed to say, obviously, the greatest day of one's life was the birth of one's children. Absolutely not. The greatest day of my life was that. Yeah, it was that absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting, and this is very much something we talk about all the time, that of course the FA would be against it.
Of course. They still are, by the way.
Well, yeah, I'm sure the FA
give tickets to that band, the Sheffield Wednesday band. Because they want them there.
I fucking hate that. Because that band never play. They may be in league. I'm very against conspiracy theory, but they may be in league with the FA because they play everything else, including like Rule Britannia and slightly questionable things.
Great Escape and
the National Anthem. Never play three lines.
But I think the songs that you've mentioned that they do play, out of copyright.
But I don't know that they would be paying copyright. I'm on this programme. I'm about to say I'm not going to charge you royalties, whoever the band is. I have slagged them off many times, so they probably won't be listening. But we're not going to charge you royalties. Just play Three Lions, because the crowd actually want to sing Three Lions. If you listen to them, they actually do.
Absolutely. And it's true that all of those, anything that is sponsored by the club or the FA or anything like that, and you know that in some meeting they've gone, they'll love this. The crowd are going to love this, aren't they? These big sticks that we can wave around in the air, or you know.
They have such a sure touch, the FA, about what the what the fans want.
The real football fans.
The clubs are the same. I don't. If you ever go to the last game of the season at home and the players come out, and they always play We Are the Champions. You think, but that's just not true.
Only one team can play this.
I did, in fact, have. I had my manager, who is not himself necessarily the right person to speak to about this, because he is thinking about the royalties, but I had him on the phone during the last tournament saying, do you think there's a conspiracy between the FA and maybe Gareth Southgate, who has his own issues with Three Lions, for reasons I can explain, to promote Sweet Caroline? Do you think they're secretly, maybe Neil Diamond's involved as well, although he is Jewish, so never involve a Jew in a conspiracy theory, because next thing you know, you're a Nazi. I did think about Sweet Caroline is people, the papers were starting to say, oh, it's a battle between Sweet Caroline and Three Lions.
Head-to-head battle for the nation's hearts.
For the nation's hearts, and then people were, and then it did have Gareth Southgate saying at one point, oh, it's good, I think, that we've, you know, moved on, I think he said at one point, and I thought, it's not a football song. It's not a competition. It's not a football song.
It's become a cricket song, hasn't it?
Can I
just say something else, which I know, obviously, this is very personal to you.
Yeah.
For me, as an England fan, the idea of this conspiracy, what really worries me is that during a major tournament, the FA are calling Gareth Southgate to one side and going, just plug Sweet Caroline a little bit more, Gareth, will you? Less of the tactics.
Don't worry about
Less
Greenwich.
Of the practice.
Don't worry about him. It's fine.
We want Sweet Caroline up there at the top and those buggers off.
Those buggers. But do you know the reason why? Well, there's various reasons why they don't like Three Lions, but we've never quite understood it. But the reason we get very kind of underground whispers is that football's coming home, which in the first place was something that was the brand of that tournament, United States football comes home, whatever, and means a number of things to a number of different people. Basically, they think other FAs are pissed off about it. And Luka Modric, you probably know this. Do you know this? Luka Modric in 2018, when Croatia beat us, did actually say we were fired up because of football's coming home. Because we don't like the idea that you English people think you own football and you are the homeland of football, right?
So, although, clearly, We historically are.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Some people think it's China, but
it's certainly not
Croatia.
Yeah. Well, it's not Croatia, because they've only existed since the early 90s. There was football before that. I know there was.
Yeah. But anyway.
Well, Yugoslavia, are they coming? Who knows? Who knows? But either way, apparently this has enough effect for the FA, who are so worried about politics that we don't want to piss off blah 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 blah, so let's not have that song that seems a bit triumphant about it. It isn't that. What's ridiculous about it is it's the most vulnerable song ever about football.
Yeah.
It says we're probably going to lose, we're always shit,
and was indeed their strap line for the tournament.
Yes, that's true.
So that's a little bit difficult to work on, isn't it?
But I don't think logical consistency shouldn't look for from the FA.
No, because they're changing people all the time. Yeah. Just, I want you, before we finish, to tell us why Gareth Southgate has an issue with the song.
Oh, well, he actually said, I didn't know this, and actually, to be fair to Gareth Southgate, I sort of understood it when he said it. He said, because it was being asked, it became a bit of a thing, and he was being asked about it at press conferences, and he said, well, actually, I couldn't listen to the song for 20 years or something.
Oh, right.
No, and then I thought, he's talking about 98. So there are two versions of Three Lions. I think the 96 version is much better. But in 1998, it begins with Jonathan Pierce's commentary on the Germany game, which has him saying, the crosses of St George are flying all around me. Gareth Southgate comes to take the penalty. Oh, no! Right. And that's what it begins with.
Well, that would be fair enough.
Yes, and that's totally fair enough.
I can see why
that's painful. But what I want to say to Gareth is, 1998 was just something we did to try and, you know, update it a bit. Yeah. 96! Look at 96. You're not mentioned in that at all. Go with that, Gareth. Yeah. And also, Jack Grealish. Go with him a bit more. Maybe Phil Foden and Grealish.
Within
the
90 minutes.
Well, I'd heard, and this came from a very good source, that the reason they were so upset was they were trying to save money before the 96 tournament, and they decided they were going to sneak the badge a bit smaller and just have two lines. And then you brought out the song, and it cost them a fortune. An absolute fortune.
Well, it is actually 2.5 lines, isn't it? Sort of a little
lion. The first time I heard it, I thought it was felines on a shirt.
Yes, a lot of people think it's sea lions.
So we're not just talking about music in football, but football and musicals. You have a little, this is a very chat showy thing.
I do have a story.
Is that the Ben Elton one?
Well, that's the point. It is Ben Elton, who I'm a big admirer of, by the way.
And Andrew Lloyd Webber, maybe, yeah.
Yes, Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the music, and Ben Elton wrote the book of The Beautiful Game, which is, I think, I've never actually seen it, a musical about football in Northern Ireland.
I think Juliet across the divide.
Yeah, through the barricades by Spandau Ballet, enlarged into a musical about football. Yeah. So here's the thing about that. Is that
who hasn't thought of doing that?
Yeah, there's a show... I'd heard for many years a showbiz rumour. There are many showbiz rumours. Frank Skinner being gay. That was a very big showbiz rumour.
Oh, I started
rumor.
That one.
No, fair enough. Yeah. But one of these was that what happened with The Beautiful Game, and it is slightly confusing because Ben Elton, lovely though he is not a big football fan.
He moved to Australia, didn't he?
Exactly. What actually happened was that Andrew Lloyd Webber wanted to write this musical because he'd read about whatever this thing in Northern Ireland and football, and it was in the 90s.
And football was cool again.
And all that. And Andrew Lloyd Webber, who I have met, and he's very nice, but I wouldn't say his attention is that great. He sort of flipped about a lot. Was watching Fantasy Football League and said to one of his minions, oh, look at that bearded Jewish glasses wearing bloke on the telly talking about football. He looks right. Go and get him to write the thing for me about football. Yeah. And they thought, who's he talking about? Ben Elton, that Jewish...
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jewish glasses comedian. Yeah, because he just phoned some bloke up. Because I'll tell you why, because the rest of the story, I think, completely confirms that this might be true, because he's got a bit of an issue with sort of names and identity or whatever. So I'd heard this many, many times, that basically he'd phoned one of his minions saying, you know, that Jewish bearded glasses comedian.
Yeah.
Off the telly.
Yeah.
I think he's good in football. Go and get him.
Yeah.
So Ben Elton writes The Beautiful Game. I always thought a bit odd. Right. Anyway, so then I meet Andrew Lloyd Webber sometime later at a showbiz party. And I say to him, because I've heard this many times, you know I'm not Ben Elton, don't you? And he looks at me in slightly confused and frightened way.
Yeah.
Like he's thinking, what's wrong with Ben? He's having some kind of nervous breakdown. What's the matter with him, right? Right? Genuinely, that's how he looked at me, right?
Because
it's like he's never heard of me and just thinks I'm Ben Elton, right? So, I mean, he had by this time done a musical with Ben Elton, but let's leave that out of my story. Right? So, then he does a weird thing, which is he is genuinely quite flustered, because I've said this thing.
It's a very strange thing to say to anybody.
Yes, you know I'm not. That's how it was like, hello, it's Andrew Lloyd Webber. I said, you know I'm not Ben Elton, don't you?
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you who I am.
No, I didn't. All right. So anyway, he looks a bit flustered, and then he moves away quite quickly. Obviously, you do know this story.
Yeah.
He moves away quite quickly, and he introduces the woman who I thought he was with, and he says, oh, this is Sarah, and moves away. Yeah. Right, and she didn't hear him say that. She was talking to someone else. Yeah. Right, and I thought that's a bit odd because I know his second wife was called Sarah Brightman. Yeah, so it's a bit odd that his third wife. Maybe it's not his wife.
Yeah.
So I start talking to her then, I say, "What do you do for Andrew?" And she looks a bit like sort of a weird question, but she says, "Oh, I look after the estate and the horses." I think, "Oh, some kind of general, looks after his stuff, kind of way and whatever." And we're chatting for a while, and then Eamon Holmes, who I don't know, this is a showbiz party, comes over, right, and says, "Hello, David." All right, I think a bit odd. I say, "Okay, hello, Eamon. This is Sarah," and that woman looks at me like really furious and says, "It's absolutely true." Says, is that meant to be some kind of joke, right? And then I realised what had happened. What had happened was, when Andrew Lloyd Webber, flustered, had left me, he'd confused the woman who he was with, his third wife, Madeline, I now know that, with his second wife, Sarah Brightman. He'd actually made that mistake. He thought, oh, it just got confused. But he hadn't told me that. So I thought her name was Sarah. And I thought, I can't explain all this to Madeline. So I just, when she said, is that meant to be some kind of joke? I said, yes. And she said, it's not a very funny one. I mean, it's incredibly, incredibly humiliating, particularly as a comedian. I know that, but I can't explain the real reason. Anyway, there is a punchline. There is a punchline, right? Which is, I then made my excuses and left, right? I left Eamon Holmes, a very important man who seemed to be humiliated. Right? I leave him and I go and find Andrew Webber, who I'm quite angry with by this point. And I pull him aside. I say, Andrew, just a word to the wise. You told me that your wife's name was Sarah. It isn't Sarah, isn't it? No, you made that mistake, but I introduced her to someone else as Sarah. That was really embarrassing. Please never do that to anyone else again. And he said, I'm really sorry about that, Ben. He genuinely said that.
He genuinely said that.
To be fair, I still don't know if that was a joke. I still don't know. I very much doubt it. I still have no idea if that was a joke.
Can I just say there's two things that immediately occur to me out of that story. One is that, you know, you've been banging on about your woke credentials and slagging us off for being two old dinosaurs. I have never been in a position anything like that with anybody over any sort of insult. And I'm quite an insulting person, okay?
Yeah. But I wasn't trying to insult anyone. Yes, that's the difference.
That's what's called passive bastard.
Oh, I see. Right.
The other thing,
it's a bit of a specialty of yours.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I believe and love the whole of that story. And the only one bit that doesn't really ring true for me is that Andrew Lloyd Webber was sitting at home watching fantasy football.
That's probably very unlikely. I imagine he was channel surfing. He's channel surfing. Yeah. He's got the beautiful game as an idea. Yeah. He sees a football, and thinks, "Oh yeah, they'll do." Yeah.
I think he could have switched it on, thinking he was going to watch football.
Yes.
I think it's got football in the title.
That's what football is.
Yeah,
two blokes on a sofa.
You know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to sit down and watch the fantasy football league. See what this is all about.
It's entirely possible that that's what he thought. Oh, I've watched some football.
Fantasy was the sponsor.
Yes, I've watched some football. Now I'll phone up one of my servants, and he'll get that bloke. Yeah. There he is.
That one there.
The one Jewish beardy.
Not the Birmingham one.
Yes,
the other one.
No, the Birmingham one. Don't know who he would have got in mistake. Yeah. Who's that bloke who used to do wheel tappers and jumps?
It ended up with
Colin Crompton.
Yes.
Listen, we're just starting to raise a bit of a problem here. The whole thing's drifting. Okay. So thanks very much to Ben Elton. You're going to sing us out with the great song that will always remind us of the summer of 2021.
Sweet Caroline.
Da, da, da.
Good times never felt so good.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Hey, Mark the producer here. Just to say, in all the fun and excitement we had, we forgot to plug David Baddiel's tour. He's performing dates all around the country, and details are available on his website. The show is called Trolls Not the Dolls, and I've seen it, and it's absolutely brilliant. His next few dates are St Albans, Leicester, Birmingham, Reading, Kingston, Northampton, Dartford. But yeah, check it out. It's very, very good. And we'll see you next week. Cheers. Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.